Episode 206, In a Franchise Funk. Gotta enunciate that one.
Be careful. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono. Guess what we are, Matt?
Back to talk about sequels.
You've got it, we are back.
Franchises.
Yeah.
You know,
originality or lack thereof.
Right before we started this, we talked about what should we call this episode, and you said the franchise fiasco, which I do.
Shoot, you know what?
I do.
I have something I was going to read. It's in my car.
Oh, well, we can take a pause here, but let me.
Do you want to just talk for 5 minutes?
Well, just let me say this real quick. A franchise fiasco was a good idea, and then I was saying in a franchise funk because it's kind of like, you know, when you're in a funk and it's just kind of like, huh, I'm down in the dumps.
Yeah,
I'm just in a funk. That's what I feel like is happening these days with franchises, but. If you have to get away, let's just do a sound effect, take a quick pause, and...
Okay, sorry, this is really awkward to pause it.
Let's just go to the main topic, because we don't have any...
That's a good idea.
The only thing that I wanted to state is that we just did a bunch of listener feedback, and in my attempt to cover everybody, I actually forgot people that responded to our episodes on our website. We did a lot of emails and Facebook, so in the next... news episode, I'll make sure to hit you.
Well, we never promised to read every piece of listener feedback.
I know,
feedback.
But there was some good stuff.
Okay.
And so if you wrote some good stuff on the website and you're like, oh, that was pretty good, why didn't they respond? Next episode. Here we go. Main topic, franchises. We'll tell you all about it next. All right, everybody, franchises. So,
yeah.
Ben, why don't you talk about... So in the last episode, we revealed that both of us kind of had different yet mutually beneficial ideas for this episode. So why don't you kick it off and I'll tie in my little part so it can be kind of my idea too.
Yeah, it's your idea too. We almost called this episode Franchises. It's Matt's idea too.
Franchises 7, the sequel blockbuster.
Legend continues. Yeah. So we had a few idea titles, but... yeah. So I think we teased this a little bit a few episodes ago where we were kind of talking about how if you look at, I forget what episode this was in, but if you look at, say, 1935 to 1990, so 55-year period, mm-hmm. roughly 50 years, and you look at all of the characters that were created in that time, things that we consider iconic. So you have Lord of the Rings released. In the early 50s, you have The Hobbit released in the late 30s. You have Star Wars.
Superman.
In the late 30s. Batman. Yep. Batman. Spider-Man. X-Men. You know, you name it.
Well, they were more in the 60s.
Sure, but this is 35 to 90s.
Yeah, gotcha.
Aliens. Terminator in the 80s. You know, you just go right down the list. Star Trek. The first Battlestar Galactica. All this stuff. That is now in some way considered iconic, influential. And then compare from about 1990, mid-90s on. Early 90s, you have some stuff like X-Files, Babylon 5 that gets kicked off.
Late 90s, you have the Matrix.
Sure. So you do have some things, but if you were... it just seems to me, and we haven't done a scientific study on this or anything... but that there's been a dramatic shift away from new stuff to retreads, to franchises, to remakes, to sequels. And that seems to me to be an interesting phenomenon to mm-hmm. look at and say, why and is this a good thing?
Yeah, and so you tied in kind of the idea of the franchises and talking about why are there so many franchises. I didn't realize, though, at the time that you were... thinking along the same lines as me, which is, you know, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of original ideas these days. And so why is that? So, yeah, I think, you know, I'm actually saying this out loud. I know we argued about this at the end of the last episode. I'm trying to think back. Was this my idea?
I don't think it was, but I'm willing to give you credit.
Maybe my idea was the part about how there's only sequels lately. And then your idea was that there's no original ideas. Is that possible?
It could be. I'm willing to go with
I know
that.
There's a portion of this that I was there for.
You're there for it all, Matt.
But I think this is super interesting.
It is.
And you went outside to go get a book to read.
I'm debating whether or not to start with that or not. Maybe we should just talk about, well, okay. I will start with that.
Okay.
But let me set the table.
We'll set the stage.
Yeah. So I think that for me, I want to take cautiously and with a few caveats the stance that this is not a good thing. Caveats being that I think we can find examples of sequels that are tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can find examples of franchises that have been good and creative. But by and large, I think that the push toward retread, the push toward sequel, the push toward a lack of originality is actually not only not a good thing from a story perspective, but in some ways is a betrayal of the principles of our favorite genres. And allow me to explain with the words of Orson Scott Card.
Now you're holding your hand. Ender's Game, and tonight's episode was almost going to be an Ender's Game episode, but I failed to see the movie.
Yeah.
So next time, maybe, or in the future.
In the future, in the distant future, the year 2000.
Yeah.
So this is fascinating to me. Now, I think in later years, Orson Scott Card has actually succumbed to the same temptation, you know, where now he even has co-writers for his Ender's series books. And so he seems to be doing the same type of thing, falling into the same trap. But I think that here, in regards to Ender's Game, he speaks very eloquently about this problem. He says, it was an idea, he's referring to when he first read the book Foundation by Isaac Asimov. Maybe that's the one you'll read, Matt.
Maybe.
It's an idea that rang true with me, perhaps in part because of my Mormon upbringing and beliefs. Human beings may be miserable specimens, but in the main, but we can learn, and through learning become decent people. Those were some of the ideas that played through my mind as I read Foundation, curled on my bed, a thin mattress and a slab of plywood, a bed my father had made for me, in my basement bedroom in our little rambler of 650 East in Orem, Utah. And then, as so many science fiction readers have done over the years, I felt a strong desire to write stories that would do for others what Asimov's story had done for me. And then here's the key part. In other genres, that desire is usually expressed by producing thinly veiled rewrites of the great work. Tolkien's disciples far too often simply rewrite Tolkien, for example. In science fiction, however, the whole point is that the ideas are fresh and startling and intriguing. You imitate the great ones not by rewriting their stories, but rather by creating stories that are just as startling and new. I first read Ender's Game with this copy, so this is the only copy I've ever owned. I first read this 14 years ago, and I still remember coming across that line in the introduction, and that was those two paragraphs there have profoundly shaped the way that I have thought about stories and about science fiction, because I think he's exactly right. Your thoughts on that, sir?
When it comes to what he was saying specifically about Asimov and how Asimov's writings influenced him and made him want to make other people think differently, I was caught thinking about is, was this series that, like this Ender Game, because he did more than Ender's Game.
Yeah.
So do you feel like, was he trying to say this is the book that he sees as the thing that he wants to people to use to think differently about the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think I maybe want to think about the quote less in terms of Ender's Game and more in terms of what he's generally saying, that the way that what science fiction is about is at its core, is what he's saying, is not retreads, not doing the same things over again, but
in order to be science fiction, it has to be original?
Well, it has to make people think in a new way, I think is what he's trying to get at.
Well, but people could think in a new way in a franchise or in a sequel.
Sure. That's the struggle, but maybe this is even abstracted a little bit from our franchise conversation, that there's a core principle at the heart of science fiction, which is about imitation through making people think in a new way.
That's a little bit of an extraction, right? That he's not actually saying that word for word.
Well, not, no. I read the quote.
Yeah.
I think that that is what he's saying in the quote, though, is that, as he said, you imitate the greats like Asimov by doing for others what they did for you, helping you think in a new way.
I'm kind of interested in the fact that you said that this influenced your thoughts on stories. So how did it? Like, what do you mean by that?
I think it makes me very suspicious of sequels, of hollow sequels anyway, of stuff that feels like it's just cheaply churned out mm-hmm. to distract us, to amuse us, but ultimately is vapid in terms of its content. You know, stuff that I've talked about before. When I read that, in a sense, I was highly obsessed with fantasy that could be considered Tolkien ripoffs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized he's right. This stuff, well, it might be entertaining. The reason it's entertaining is because it's ripping off something great.
Okay.
And rather than doing that, I want to spend my time on stuff that's helping me to think in a new way that isn't just a retread. And maybe that is a sequel sometimes. I mean, for example, the sequel to Ender's Game, Speaker for the Dead, is astonishing. It's wonderful.
And it's totally different.
Totally different. I can't say the same for all the sequels mm-hmm. that he's written.
What do you think about Ender's Shadow?
I think that one's good as well. I think that as both those two series goes on, they yeah. lose their quality. But yeah, the first sequels are fantastic. So it's not that no sequel can do this, but that I'm highly suspicious of any work that isn't fundamentally about that.
I feel like today we see this most often in movies. Like, this is the easiest place to see it.
Yep.
Where I believe it just comes down to money. It's easy to draw people in. Well, sequels are based on how much money they make in the first film.
Right.
So if they make enough, then you right away hear, like, within the first few weeks after a movie is released, if it's going to be a franchise or not. And it's all just, can they make money off of it? And
right.
So I know that that's part of the world, that making money is okay. But when it comes to storytelling and good products out there for us to consume, I feel like it takes away a little bit when it's all just about making money back.
Yeah. And this goes to maybe one of the main things I wanted to talk about, which is the question of, okay, if we say that we see this lack of originality, and maybe you don't if you're listening, but I think Matt and I are on board that there is this issue. And I think people in general see that there's a lot of reboots, a lot of sequels, a lot of franchises. Some of them are good. Most of them aren't.
I think, go ahead. I don't want you to ruin your thought, or were you stopping?
No. Let me just tack this on.
Yeah.
That I think the question becomes, whose fault is that?
Okay. Before we go too far, I think it is interesting what you were saying, and I want people to go back and think about it a little bit, where you listed off a handful of characters that were created in this 50-year time span, or, you know, 50-plus. It's very interesting to look at who are the big names right now in movies, TV, books. It's all of those same characters.
Yeah.
So why? I'd like to kind of explore the question, why is that? Why isn't there more originality right now?
Excellent. I think it's the same question. You know, so whose fault is that? If we don't want to go down the road of fault, why is that?
Yeah.
So part of it is the money thing. But as I was thinking about this, I almost want to punt on that part of it. And here's why.
Just because it's so easy.
It's easy, but it's also, I think, a little bit unfair. And here's why. It's a studio executive's job to make money for the studio. Especially, look at how much some of these movies cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it or not, that's the person's job. And when a movie costs $200 million to produce, it better be a hit. That's just the world we live in.
Yeah.
Now, is there a place to maybe critique that world? Sure, but I think that's a different conversation. That I don't blame somebody whose job it is to make money for a studio for doing what they can to make money for a studio. I think the better question is, why do these make money? And there the answer is us.
Yes.
We're the ones who are at fault with this.
Yeah.
We are the ones who keep going for this stuff, even while we recognize that maybe it's a problem. So I want this to be more of an introspective, reflective conversation.
Okay, this is a really interesting conversation to have right now because we're approaching Thanksgiving pretty soon. And Black Friday has been turned into a holiday where the day after Thanksgiving, all the retail stores have sales going on. It started being where people would, you know, a couple years back, you were lining up at, like, I don't know, 3 in the morning so that when the doors opened at 5 or 6, you were there and you could get the new TV or whatever you wanted. Then last year, I can't remember the exact if it was last year or the year before, it was like midnight or 10 p.m. stores were opening on, and so now it's actually on Thanksgiving that they start. And now today, or this week, I heard what time Target and Best Buy and those stores are opening. Have you heard this already?
8 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah, I heard some are like at 6 p.m. Some are 8 p.m. And so this is now Thanksgiving dinner time. And yeah. To be honest, I actually do like going out and getting some deals on Black Friday.
Yeah.
But I'm not leaving family time on Thanksgiving. I refuse to shop within the day of Thanksgiving. So
I don't know. By 6 o'clock, I'm pretty sick of family time.
But so the point I'm trying to make is...
I agree with you.
The point I'm trying to make is I want to take a stand against this because I don't... I mean, eventually, the stores are just going to be open on Thanksgiving. It's crazy. So I'm not going to go, even though I'd like to be there for some of the deals. And sure, I'm going to miss out on some things. But it's more important for me to take a stand for family than it is... I just want to send a message, me individually. And if more of us join in, then they won't open so early. Okay.
So you see that as being kind of a parallel to... Yeah, we could blame the executives because they should know better, but at the same time, it's the executive's job to make money for the company.
Yeah, so if you feel like you want more original ideas, then stop going to sequels.
Yeah. So why do we go to sequels, then? And not just like, I think, again, we're using the term broadly, but, you know, you can... It's one thing to talk about going to The Dark Knight. It's another thing to talk about going to Mighty Ducks 12.
Okay, I know why. Because of the characters, in the sense that... Even if the movie's not good, you know the characters more, and you care about the characters more than you would if you're just going into something unknown. So Thor 2. I just saw Thor 2 this past weekend. We won't do a review of that right now, but I don't think it was necessarily... I did like it better, but I don't know necessarily that it was a better movie. I just cared about the people in the movie more.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was a better movie as a whole. I definitely enjoyed it a lot more than Thor 1, a ton more. But is it just because I know the people in the movie, and so then... things that happen to them affect me more? I'm not positive, but that could be part of it. That could be why people like sequels.
Do you think that we ask too little of our entertainment?
Right now, I think we all ask too little of our entertainment.
Yeah, in the sense that whether it's I like that character, so I'm just going to go, or that looks like it would be a fun way to spend 2 hours, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go. You see what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But again, I want to dig deeper, okay, and say, why do we do that? And here's where I want to throw this big idea at you. I think that what we see with franchises and sequels and reboots today is actually a hollow imposter version of an innate human way of looking at stories that has always existed. Okay.
Explain.
I'll unpack that
okay.
a little bit.
Elaborate.
So, in a sense, we could say no more franchises, we just want originality, but I think we're barking up the wrong tree there, because if I look historically at stories, there isn't a lot of originality. For example, you have mythology, which is fundamentally telling new stories about old characters or retelling old stories about those characters in a new way. You have oral tradition that is fundamentally about passing on the same story to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
In a religious context, we have liturgy, you know, which is fundamentally the same thing. Telling of the same stories over and over again. Look at Exodus, the Passover narrative. We have the commandment to tell your children this, to don't be original, to repeat this story. It's not about you reinventing the wheel. So we have this kind of what I will call the mythological tradition, in the sense of how we have looked at stories, that they are about revisiting the same stuff. Homer didn't invent Zeus, Athena, and all these guys. He wrote, or at least wrote down the stories that involved these characters in the form of the Iliad and the Odyssey. But even then, those stories were likely not brand new to even his earliest readers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that. And then we have today. And on the surface, they seem very parallel. But when you dig into it, that's when the one appears to be meeting a core human desire that is met in the form of story, and the other is hollow, which is that those stories are about depth. They're meant to – mythology is meant to tell us something about ourselves, our culture, or teach us something, our world, to explain the world around us. Same thing with liturgy. Same thing with oral tradition. It is meant to preserve, to help us to grow, and shape us as human beings. whereas what we see with franchises and sequels today is about amusing us for the sake of making money. So we have very similar techniques on the outside, but very different underneath. Your thoughts?
It's interesting that you put it that way because, yeah, in the past, it was more about being meaningful and imparting some sort of, even in our childhood, a lot of the TV shows we would watch would have the moral of the story at the end. And so it was meant to leave you with, okay, now this is how the story you just saw should be changing your life.
Right.
But it's not that way nowadays.
No. And even if we, you know, look at something maybe a little more subtle than a moral for, you know, an adult context or whatever. I didn't see Thor 2, but I can imagine that that, without seeing it, I'm not reviewing it, so nobody freak out. My guess would be that that movie isn't out to make profound commentary on the human condition. Would that be your takeaway?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's true.
You know, it's meant to entertain you.
Yeah.
Which, there's nothing wrong with that in small quantities, but my concern is that that's not the fundamental purpose of stories. And what we have now is this fake version that is exploiting the mythological desire, which is a good desire, I would say a God-given desire, an essential part of our psychology and spirituality, to repeat and tell stories, to revisit familiar characters for the sake of preserving tradition, for the sake of preserving our humanity and helping us integrate as people in this world. And then we have stories that take that same desire and just amuse us. And I think that that, to me, is part of the core of what Card is getting at in that quote, where he says that, you know, on the one hand, it's going back to the well, repeating Tolkien just for the sake of, that was fun, let's do it again.
Yeah.
And going back to, this taught me something profound, I want to do the same thing in a similar way.
Yeah. Oh, so then, if we can recognize this, how can we, as people that are more consuming stories and not necessarily creating them for the mass public, what can we do, really?
Can I throw in one other layer before we get there?
Oh, yeah.
So this is the other part that has come to me. Do you remember in episode 200, we, of course, asked people to send in questions. Do you remember the final question that we read?
I believe it was, who is the modern Tolkien or Lewis in when it comes to Christian fiction, right?
Yes.
Okay. whoa, lots of coughing.
I nearly died.
You kind of scared me for a second. I was like on the edge of my seat. You're about to answer.
Okay. I need a drink of water.
Okay, so who is it? So we didn't answer the question. We actually left it at, we couldn't think of who is as important as Tolkien or Lewis.
Yeah, I think we answered there isn't one. But that question honestly stuck with me a long time after we finished the episode, because I started to ask myself, why isn't there one?
Yeah.
And so I started to ask, okay, in a sense you could say, well, these two were geniuses. Geniuses don't come along all that often. But that seems cheap. You know, maybe we're not going to have another Tolkien or Lewis, but is there a difference in the way that they, the world they looked at story-wise and what we look at story-wise?
Well, but I do want you to continue this, but I think the world was just so much different then. When I think about all of the media that we have available to us and all of the noise, and there isn't, I've been thinking about this a lot in my own life, really. I never allow there to be silence. So even as I was preparing for you to come over here today, I had my iPod on listening to Strangers and Aliens episode 100, which they just released. And I was just going around, and then I set that down, and then I had a TV show playing in the background while I was doing some dishes and whatnot. And so I never allow there to be my own introspective time just in my own life. And I think back to years ago when we had some of these great things being created, people had a lot of time to think. They were in their own place. They were quiet. I think that the world we live in isn't great for new creations.
Right. And in the case of Tolkien and Lewis, if you look at their lives and you look at the things they read, they wanted there to be fantasy and, you know, these types of stories. That's one of the reasons they wrote, is because they wanted this out there and there wasn't something out there. But what they did then to meet that sci-fi Christian desire, if you will, for those types of stories, is they looked backwards. You know, they went to the mythologies. They read these great stuff that met that need in a more profound way. And so I have to ask myself, and ask you, if they didn't have that, if they grew up in an environment like we have, media everywhere, and not only media, but sci-fi-esque media,
yeah,
could they have produced what they did?
I'm thinking about it because I've been asking myself this similar question, not in regards to Tolkien and Lewis, but just are those people that we consider creative geniuses, were they geniuses because of the world they lived in? They were allowed to be in their own imagination.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to answer the question.
Or not only their own imagination, but also a richer imaginative worlds from mythological eras.
Yeah, because I think we're more accepting of crazy ideas because we've seen so much.
Right.
But these people were creating the crazy ideas.
Yeah.
And so... You know, I don't know if they would have been able to do it in today's world.
If, or to put it another way, if Lewis spent his weekends watching Thor 2 instead of reading the Iliad, would that have made a difference in his works?
Yeah, and I can already hear, I know that we have creatives in our audience, and so I don't want people to think we're saying there can be no creative ideas anymore. We're just speculating here and just talking this out. I think that if you are a creative in this world, you do have to get through a lot more noise than people from the past had to.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that even if you look at modern creatives who are creating great works,
mm-hmm.
They're driven by a similar dissatisfaction that forces them to look at things in a new way. For example, somebody like George R. R. Martin, well, he grew up reading comic books and all this stuff, but he was dissatisfied with the state of fantasy as it was in the mid-90s and fundamentally reinvented the genre with Game of Thrones. Now that's been imitated 1,000 times. You see that in what I read from Orson Scott Card, another person who would have grown up in a later generation than Tolkien and Lewis, obviously.
It's funny. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, a great creative mind of our time, Damon Lindelof, I remember reading once that he doesn't like when he's in the middle of creating a TV show. He doesn't actually like to watch a lot of television or movies because he wants to stay away from other people's ideas. So.
Well, that's maybe not the best example. But
Damon Lindelof. Damon. What a great guy.
Gotta love that Damon. But there's a moral side to this that I think we need to explore a little bit, because I think one of the objections you could lodge is say, okay, maybe we're depriving the world of one or two geniuses. But I'm never going to be the next Tolkien or Lewis, so why does it matter for me?
Okay.
Well, I think it's not just about that they were able to create Lord of the Rings. And yeah, most of us aren't going to write or even have the potential to write something like Lord of the Rings and Narnia. We just don't. Maybe Alan and Aaron will get there.
Mm-hmm.
A few more Flight of the Angels sequels. So I still have hopes for them. But the rest of us, you know, probably not.
And actually, I'm glad you brought them up because... they're working on sequels to their books,
yeah.
But we know, because we know them personally, that there is something behind it. They're not just creating because they want their story and their message out there, not because they're like banking a ton of money on what they're putting together.
Yeah,
hopefully they are eventually.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully we can get in on that.
We can help them, you know, get the name, get the word out there.
We'll just say that we're their agents and we get 10%.
Oh, nice thinking. Okay.
Yeah. See how that works? We did nothing and we just got money.
Agents.
Theoretically.
High five.
Agents of St. Anthony Village.
Continue.
Okay. So the point isn't about whether or not you can produce this. The point is that I think Tolkien and Lewis had greatness inside of them that was able to be uncovered because of the, at least in part, I don't want to be reductionistic here,
mm-hmm.
but a part of why that greatness was uncovered was the story environment that they lived in and grew up in. And I think stories do affect us on that level. They are a factor in terms of what we uncover in ourselves. And in particular, from a theological perspective, Father Robert Barron, who I've talked about on the show before, in his series Catholicism, there's a part where he's talking about the saints. And he talks about how we're all called to be a saint.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not using the term in the sense, I know some people use saints to anybody who's saved. I'm talking about somebody who achieves a level of holiness and greatness in their faith that is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so don't get caught up on Catholic terminology. Just stick with me in the central idea here.
Okay.
We're all called to be saints. And I think that stories play a role in that. I think that if we are devoting more and more of our time to mindless entertainment, not that there's never a time to just have fun or something, but if we're doing that over and over and over again, instead of sitting under the presence of great stories, great books, old stuff, and new stuff that's good, but especially old stuff, are we in some way at risk of depriving ourselves of who we could be?
So you read a lot of old stuff.
I try to.
And is this why you do it?
Yeah, it's a big... I mean, there's another quote from C.S. Lewis that where he says that every time you read a new book, you should read an old book.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, I don't know that I adhere strictly to that. But yeah, I do try and make sure that I'm reading old stuff. And this is part of why.
You should write. Why don't you write a book?
Well, I've thought about it. Part of it is because I feel conflicted. Like,
What is conflicting?
The moral conflict I have, and again, this is me. Now, I'm not talking to any creatives out there, okay? So okay. This is my own issue. I don't want to put anything out there unless I'm confident I'm not just adding to the noise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we already talked about how this world's so loud, and there's so many options. So I feel like if I was to put something out there, I need to be confident that it's not just more of the same.
Do you have an idea for what you would do fiction-wise? You know exactly what it would be?
I know exactly what it would be.
Don't tell here on the show. I want to ask you, though, afterwards.
Okay.
What about nonfiction? Would you ever write nonfiction?
I don't know. Maybe. I enjoyed editing Rick's book a lot, so
yeah.
We'll see.
When's Rick's book going to be available for us?
Well, the Kickstarter ended today, and he just texted me, actually. I read the text in between shows and said that we got to the level for hardcover.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So does that mean... since I support him, I'm going to get a hardcover copy?
I don't know.
Rick, I want a signed hardcover.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, he's gotten a lot of cool endorsements for that and everything.
Yeah, I saw you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So, yeah, maybe. But, no, I lost my train of thought.
Sorry. So
that's okay.
You were kind of saying that current creatives may be stifled by the noise.
Right. You know, and what are we doing to, what role do stories play in your life in terms of unlocking that saint inside of you, helping you in your sanctification? Mm-hmm. Because if you say they don't play a factor and they're just for entertainment, I flat out disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't agree with that at all. I think stories are very spiritual in terms of the role they play in our lives. They're psychological, emotional. We like stories. I mean, if you think about it just analytically, take emotion, spirituality out of it, it's very bizarre that we like stories. I mean, they're all invented worlds,
mm-hmm.
right? Why should we care about this? Well, we care about it because it speaks to something deeper inside of us, right? And so what you're consuming story-wise, it's not just like, this isn't a cheap Sunday school thing where, you know, if you watch a movie with swear words in it, you're going to hell. You know, this is a lot deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
This is about who you are as a person. And are you consuming stuff that is helping you to approach the world differently, to think differently, to become more of who you are called to be by God? Or are you settling for mindless entertainment because it looks fun for a couple hours and I'll just shut my brain off and go with it?
So you are saying then we should take a stand against those types of things?
Do
you think it will make a difference?
I do. For myself, you know, like
so,
I said.
Oh, I want you to continue this. But so you're saying it will make a difference, maybe not in Hollywood, but in your own life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For yourself.
Yeah, for myself. That's why I'm not too concerned about seeing something like Thor 2. Like, because I look at that and I say, well, number one, I'm probably not going to enjoy it. So there's that.
Okay.
But even if it looks okay or whatever, I might enjoy parts of it. I just look at that and I say, well, I'm not going to make much of an effort to see that. Because I just don't see it contribute. The gain for me is very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to help me. And if you're somebody out there who just wants to have fun with it for a couple hours, again, there's nothing wrong with that in small quantities. This is more about choosing those times wisely.
So does this shed some light on why you often come off as negative against today's popular movies and television?
Oh, very, very much.
It's not that you just want to be negative against things.
No.
It's that you have this strong moral belief,
right,
that what you consume really affects you.
Yeah, and I'm glad you put it in that in those terms, because that's exactly what I would say. I see this as a moral issue. For example, I've stopped watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You said you were going to give it 10 episodes.
I did.
It hasn't been 10 episodes.
It hasn't, because as after episode 200, as I was considering this question, I realized, you know what? This is not worth my time, and this is not a good thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like things that are fundamentally not contributing to who I am, to my growth as a person, those need to be limited. And this is one that needs to go for me. And that's not judgment against anybody who feels differently or is watching the show or whatever.
Yeah,
I just feel like it bothers me how often I hear, well, it's just fun. It's just fun. Okay, but when 99% of what we consume is just fun, there's something wrong with that.
Okay, now that's a good point, because I know you hate the term popcorn movie. Right. And so, yeah, a lot of people will say, I just go and I turn my brain off and I just enjoy it. Yeah. So I think that is okay sometimes, but I think what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, is that we are saying that now more often than not.
The ratio is off.
Yeah,
whatever the ratio should be, and I'm not going to tell you.
Because it's up to everybody else to figure out their own, how they feel about this themselves.
Right. You know, I don't think there's a hard and fast ratio out there, but the ratio's skewed big time.
Okay, so this is interesting, because I hadn't heard you really put it like this before, but it's not that you're against going to see movies for fun. It's that the majority of movies we see nowadays are just for fun.
Yeah, and I tend to come off strongly against it because of how skewed I see it as. And I feel like there's so many voices saying the opposite that I need to be the voice that says, that stands up for this position. And that's what I try and do.
Wow.
You know, and that's part of why I read more books too, because quite frankly, I can find a book that's going to make me think and contribute to who I am as a person a lot more easily than I am movies. I've mentioned this to you that I think if you sit down and watch all my book reviews that I do on YouTube, I sound suspiciously over positive at times, you know, in terms of how much I like, because it's easy for me to find a book that is going to make me think, it's going to be good, you know, whereas it's all often quite a chore with movies and TV. Not that there aren't out there.
I'll be honest, I haven't really watched your book reviews because I don't like spoilers. So
I know. Try not to spoiler.
Oh,
spoil,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, walk us through what, if, because I've seen there are like 20 plus minutes, sometimes longer. What do you talk about in the review if you're not spoiling?
Okay, so I'll use Dan Simmons' new book, The Abominable.
The Abominable?
Yeah, I think we even have
Abominable.
We have.
I'm pretty good at it now. I've been practicing it in my downtime.
You know, this is actually funny because I don't know if people know this, but you were actually brought in to read the audiobook version of The Abominable.
Uh-oh.
And you got fired on the title page because things went like this.
Abominable.
Yeah, so that didn't go well.
So, okay, so back
to
the
true story.
Abominable.
Yeah, so without going into any spoilers, the book is fundamentally about, it takes place in the mid-20s. It's about a group of climbers going up Mount Everest, okay? So it gets into issues of masculinity. It gets into issues of doing something hard and challenging yourself and pushing yourself in a profound way. And the way that he gets into the mental and physical struggle of this group of hikers is just incredible. And I reflected on some of that, you know, in my own life, you know, the hiking trip that I went on in August and everything, and the way that that pushed me physically, which is nothing like what these people in the book were going through, but it aroused some of those different feelings in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about some of the parallels I see between what Simmons was accomplishing in this book and Ernest Hemingway's writings, and how Ernest Hemingway is able to sit there and write about something like bullfighting or fishing or big game hunting or something like this and make you feel like there's something worthwhile going on here, even though on the surface it seems like a meaningless activity. And that's part of the brilliance of Hemingway, is the way he's able to get into the psychology of life. And I think Simmons tapped into that in this book in a very similar way. So I talk about the ideas in the book a lot more than I do the book itself.
Good. All right. So I feel like we're heading towards the wrap up with this franchise talk. I think the questions you've asked are really interesting. But did we actually get to what can I mean, we touched on it, but what can we do? Leave us with some action items.
I have a C.S. Lewis quote.
Okay.
To leave you with.
Good. So this is an action item for the audience. If you feel like this is resonating with you, here's what you can do.
So this is somewhat out of context of his original writing, but I think it applies. And so I would say the best thing you can do is start to learn to be dissatisfied with your entertainment. Okay? And here's what I mean. C.S. Lewis says, "It would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased." And I would echo that sentiment in a different context, but I do think it applies. We are far too easily pleased when it comes to our entertainment choices. And we need some of that holy dissatisfaction Lewis is talking about. We need to realize that stories impact us at a profound level, that they shape who we are spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, and stop being satisfied with middle-of-the-road stuff. Just because it's not good enough isn't good enough when it comes to stories.
So as some action items, should we start cutting out some of the things that we're watching on TV if it's just okay?
I think so. That's what I tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is before, and I wish I could remember who asked that question, mm-hmm. but before I started pondering that question about who's the modern Tolkien and Lewis, you know, like I said, I was going to keep watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was going to go see Thor 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, no, I don't want to spend, you know, whatever that ratio is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want those things bumping the ratio of mindless entertainment versus meaningful entertainment up for me. It's not worth it.
That's it. Oh, that'd be kind of interesting to pay attention to what percentage of your week, your month are you giving to mindless entertainment and what's something that actually has some impact on your life and how you want to live.
Right.
Hmm. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, don't you see? I think you even see that where you've cut out like, you were watching Revolution or whatever.
Yeah, mine was more of a time thing. I don't know if I was thinking of it in the same terms, but I did feel like there's a lot I'm watching that's just okay, and I don't think I can do it anymore.
Yeah, but time's part of it. I mean, because if we all had infinite time,
mm-hmm.
it would matter a whole lot less, yeah. if at all. You know, if I had infinite time, I'd go see Thor 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so part of it is that we do have limited time. And we need to use that wisely. And so that's where the ratio is off to me. On the other hand, even if we had infinite time, I'm convinced there are some people who would never sit there and read Milton or Dante or Homer or anything like that. And
if they add those to my list for 2014.
There you go, 2014.
Yeah.
Okay. How's the 5-minute Iliad going?
Ooh. Not good. That's what I need to do.
Minute three.
I need to start, you and I together, we'll start to put together a list of books that are actually doable for me. So not like big, yeah. Neal Stephenson's books, but, you know, like.
Baby steps.
Yeah, like Dante's Inferno is not huge, right?
That one's a little tricky.
I heard Asimov. You told me that was short.
Yeah.
Yeah, just some Asimov. Or Bradbury's pretty short.
Yeah.
So you and I will make a list.
You've read Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah, but it was in high school. I think I could go for reading it again.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, there's lots changing here at the Sci-Fi Christian.
I think. Did you have any? I know I kind of droned on forever.
No, I mean, your thoughts were really good. I tried to add on when I felt like they would be help add to your point. But yeah, I think that I think it's interesting. I'm most interested in, now that we are hearing this, what can we do with that information? I don't want to just think about it, even though that's good too. I want to put this into action. So for me, it would be some immediate steps could be stop watching even more shows than I already have, because I've already cut out Once Upon a Time, Revolution, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
A couple others I just can't think of right now because they're not on my queue anymore. But yeah, what can I cut out from TV? Should I be more discerning on even the movies? I still like Marvel, so I'll still see those. I know we disagree on that.
Well, just to be clear, I want to be very clear on this. When I use those as examples, but like for you, you know, if you say, I'm a Marvel fan, I get that these aren't the deepest things in the world.
Yeah.
That's okay. Again, it's not none. It's just, where's the ratio at? So maybe you say, those are going to be part of my ratio.
Yeah.
For me, I don't like the MCU enough for most of those movies to be part of my ratio.
Here's an interesting question for you.
Yes,
so,
sir.
So, yeah, this is good. For me, Marvel would be some of the stuff that's not great, But I still really like going to see it. I still plan on seeing every Marvel movie that comes out. What's yeah. that thing for you? What's the thing that you kind of know isn't great, but you still want to keep watching?
Oh.
Oh, don't.
Well, Heroes.
No, that's for the show.
That is for the show.
No, for you personally.
I try not to.
So you are saying you have zero fun in your life?
No, I find stuff like the Iliad fun.
I know, but I'm saying what thing, you know what I'm getting at. What thing yeah. do you like that is more mindless, it's not necessarily deep, but you still enjoy it?
Are you trying to get me to say video games?
No, I'm not. I'm not trying okay. to get you to say.
Because I would make an argument for video games that the psychological benefits are there in moderation.
I'm not trying to lead you at all. I'm really interested.
I guess I would have to ponder, and I'm not trying to say that to put myself on a pedestal, but I don't like mindless entertainment.
I know, but you
realize I don't enjoy it.
You're going to sound like an idiot if you say, I don't watch anything that's not... You have to come up with something. Just think of something.
Okay, I don't like mindless stuff. You know, okay, I like some quirky comedies like something like Red Dwarf, though I thought it had some interesting things to say. So some stuff like that. You know, I'm going to go see Anchorman 2. I'm not expecting Anchorman 2 to change my
life.
There
you go. You know, okay. So I knew you could do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's things like that. But I don't like mindless entertainment. I don't find it entertaining. I get that I'm in the minority there. So this is easier for me than it is for some people. But I don't like shutting my brain off. I find it fun when I get to think. I enjoy watching. I just finished reading The Odyssey. I'm going to have a book review up in a couple mm-hmm. days. I enjoy reading The Odyssey more than I would going to see Thor 2. The Odyssey is more entertaining to me. And I get that that sounds crazy to most people, but that's just the way I am.
When it comes to your reading, are you kind of a speed reader, or do you skim a little bit, or do you actually read every word?
I don't read every word and everything. It depends on the book. Some books need to be skimmed, you know. For example, I just finished Stephen King's new novel, Dr. Sleep, and I thought that he had some really profound, meaningful things to say in the first half of that mm-hmm. book. Then it kind of devolved into entertainment in the second half. I finished it, but I read the first half a lot more carefully than I did the second half after he kind of lost my interest a little bit.
That's a skill I need to acquire, is not reading every word, because when I read every word. I'm not good at skimming.
Sometimes details... this is interesting. And I mentioned this in my Flight of the Angels review, where they start to... Alan and Aaron started to go into detail about like how these ships operate and their mm-hmm. engines and all of that. And I mentioned in my review, I skimmed those sections, but not because I thought they were bad. That I like when I like knowing details are there, mm-hmm. even if I don't read every word of them.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
If you don't like to read them, why do you like that they're there?
Because I like... It lets me know that the author has put thought into this, they've put work into this, and if I want to know more, it's there.
How do you skim it, though? When you say you skim, you mean you basically just skip past that part, or...?
I don't skip. I mean, you kind of... I don't know.
I think this is a skill I need to acquire. I don't really understand how you do that.
Yeah, you just kind of let your eyes move over the paragraph at a faster speed, picking out words here or there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so you get some of the vague idea of what's going on. Like, I get the vague idea of what they're trying to get at with these planes. I couldn't repeat it back to anybody in detail, but I get the fact that they put thought into it.
Oh, my gosh. 2014, the year of skimming.
There you go.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to that.
So I think it's a balance. It depends on the book. It depends on the author. Some books need that attention where you are reading every word and reading it carefully. Some books don't, and sometimes it depends on the portion of the book you're reading, too.
Good. All right. I'm ready to move on to story time, unless you have some closing thoughts. I think that those were your closing thoughts.
I think so, too.
So before we get into story time...
2014, the year of dissatisfaction.
I want to make it the year of skimming, but... Or just reading more books.
Skimming because of dissatisfaction.
Yeah, maybe we should try to challenge our audience to read more.
Yeah.
Maybe. There's lots of things we could do next year. We'll think about it.
No movie episodes next year. No TV show episodes next year. Just book episodes next year.
That's not true. That is not true. Here we go. Story time.
It's sci-fi Christian story time.
Now, I have to say to you on the air, because I said this off the air. I re-listened to The Lost Off with Wayne Henderson, which I really enjoyed that episode. And at the end, of course, you did another installment of your Disney-themed story time.
Yes.
And you left us at a place where I was actually excited. Like, I'm very much anticipating and excited to hear about the worst day.
Okay. Day three. So you'll remember on day two that I fell asleep exhausted because I had been woken up quite early the day before because we had to get to the park. So the wife and I had a talk that night before bed. I said, look, we can't do that. Okay, that's just not going to work. We're all going to be miserable and exhausted. We're going to have a bad time. And she agreed with me after some discussion. So we decided, okay, here's the plan for day two. Day three. We're not going to split up the day, like do some in the morning, some in the evening. We'll spend the morning at the hotel, we'll swim because I have a nice pool. The kids will like that. And then we will go to Magic Kingdom around lunchtime and then stay through dinner.
Okay.
Okay. So first thing in the morning, you know, this is working out good. I slept a little later. We're all more rested. Time to hit the pool, kids. Well, it's time to go to that fancy pool because that's one of the things you got to love about Disney is they have these cool pools and everything that your kids will hate. They hated the pool.
Why did they hate it?
They liked swimming, but like the kiddie pool had like these little waterfalls and everything, and they don't want water dumped on them.
Okay.
And so we're in there, and they got all these fancy slides and everything, and all this cool stuff in the pool, and the kids hate it. So what pool do we wind up at? We wind up at the crappy little pool that's about the equivalent of the neighborhood swimming pool that's an absolute piece of junk,
okay,
and we could have gone to at home for $5. So that's where we're swimming when we're at Disney World. So this is a sign that, okay, you know, because what we'd kind of been telling ourselves up till this point is, well, maybe the kids get a little stressed out at the parks, but at least we'll have fun at the resort because all the cool stuff. Nope, not going to happen. Didn't happen.
So they were not having fun at the park. They weren't having fun at the resort.
They weren't having fun at the resort. Now the resort's swimming pool is out. So their favorite thing at the resort was the little lizards running around. So that's what we spent.
What is that? Like actual lizards? Like little,
yeah, it's Florida. So
real life animals just invading the resort?
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of seeing a chipmunk run around here in Minnesota.
Gotcha.
And having that be the favorite part of your $1,000 vacation.
Okay. Are you for real that was their favorite part, the lizards?
Yeah.
By far.
At least Owen. So Ellie's a little bit older, so she liked some of the rides. But yeah.
Okay, so continue.
The lizards were the hit.
That's sad.
Yeah. Owen's favorite part, other favorite part, was getting to sleep next to me because we tried having them sleep in the same bed as each other and that didn't go well. He sleeps sideways, apparently. So, like, okay. I had no room in the bed.
Like, perpendicular to you?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He's like this big, you know, and he takes up 90% of the bed. It was unreal. And then he'd wake me up by hitting me in the morning. So, it's just terrible. So it's time to go to Magic Kingdom, and it's hot, and we're miserable and everything. So we start out the day, and it quickly becomes apparent that my wife has an agenda.
Uh-oh.
Now, this is not good. I later learned that she had a list of rides that we were going to get to or else. And so she has this agenda, and we are going to meet it. So this goes okay for a little bit, but it eventually starts to wear us down because it's hot, it's tiring. Somewhere mid late morning, early afternoon, Ellie announces that she cannot find her baby Minnie. She had bought this little 2-inch tall baby Minnie that at Disney World. It's like a ridiculous amount of money for this thing.
How much?
It was, I think, $10
for a little tiny,
for like a 1-inch baby mini.
Okay.
So I did what any sensible parent would do, which is I lied to my daughter.
Oh no!
I told her that I had a baby mini detector on my phone that could track down baby mini and would do so later that night.
You did
well.
This is the worst lie you've ever told.
She believed me. Okay, here are the choices.
Baby mini detector.
Let me explain to you the choices. I had two choices. Number one, lie to my daughter and keep everything happy because I'm going to go spend another $10 on this baby mini. So really, it cost me $20.
So you did have to buy another one?
Oh, yeah, I did.
So you never found the first one?
No, she had brought it with her to the park and had lost it somewhere. So it's gone. it's gone.
Oh, no.
Okay.
You spent $20 on a 2-inch
because
toy.
The other option is we're like an hour and a half into our Magic Kingdom adventure. We've got like another 7 hours to go. And she is going to flip out if she has lost Baby Minnie.
Okay.
So I convinced her that not only did I have a Baby Minnie detector, but that I could tell that Baby Minnie was safe and waiting for her to be picked up later on. Okay?
How old is Ellie?
5. She bought it. Thank you, Jesus. She bought it. So, more on that later.
Okay.
So, we're going through our day, and Annie and I are having fights every, half hour, hour schedule. I keep telling her that, it's time to tone it down. We don't need to get to everything. Yes, we do. This is our last day at Magic Kingdom. We're not coming back here another day. We got to get to everything. No, we don't.
Wait, just back up a little bit. Yeah. I know this was your last. How many days did you spend there?
Well, this is just the last day at Magic Kingdom.
Why, what else is left?
We still haven't done Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
And we still haven't done Epcot. So we have 2 more days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but last
so
day.
So Magic Kingdom. Okay.
This is the last day of Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
So, we're fighting as we go and everything. Owen's unhappy because Owen still takes a nap every afternoon. And because we decided on the lesser of two evils of not splitting up the day, but keep, just going straight through. It becomes apparent by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We still have 6 hours to go because we stayed there for like 9.5 hours. I counted. It was miserable that he is just at the end of his rope. He's exhausted, but we're still charging on ahead because we have to get to Meet the Princesses time and we have to go to the 3D show. We have to do this and the aerial ride and all of this nonsense. Okay, so the day is just miserable. We're tired. We're crabby. The kids are barely having fun. We're lying to them so that they'll be happy and think that they're having a good time. And then it comes time for dinner. Okay, so dinner time has arrived. And we are at Cinderella's Royal Table.
Oh, that's nice.
Which costs 2 of your entries on the dining plan.
Okay. I don't understand that.
So the dining plan that you get, it gives you like a certain number of dinners, a certain number of quick service counter fast food lunch things, and a certain number of snacks. So Cinderella's Royal Table consumes two each of your dinners. Okay, so that means that rather than having dinner covered by the dining plan every day, there's now going to be a day where we have to pay for it out of pocket, which is not a good thing. So this starts out with us getting our picture taken with Cinderella. And they asked, do you want just the kids in there or the family? And Annie says, we want the family. So we wind up taking like the most awkward picture of Cinderella and us ever.
Why? What made it awkward?
I'll show it to you sometime. It won't work on the radio, but I'll show it to you and maybe I'll put it up on the site or something like that.
No,
but
just do that. Don't show it to me. Just put it up on Facebook.
Yeah, it's like Cinderella's there with a really fake smile because she's posed with 500 families that day. I'm sitting next to her just absolutely miserable.
Like, were you smiling at least?
Doing like a glare smile type thing. Okay. Gotta look happy for the kids, but I'm not happy.
Yeah.
So we finally get up to Cinderella's Royal Table, and this is at the top of Cinderella's castle at Magic Kingdom, which should be cool, but turns out it isn't. It's a very crowded room.
Oh, this is so sad.
It's also kind of a old building, apparently, because there's a leak in the ceiling that is dripping on me through the entire meal.
This is awesome.
Now, Magic Kingdom is unique among the Disney parks in the sense that it is dry. There is no alcohol served there.
Okay.
And I knew that going in. I wasn't enjoying it. But I got to give props to the waiter who comes up to me and says, what do you want to drink? I said, I'll have an iced tea. He goes, yeah, I'm sorry, we don't have anything stronger. It's like, you are awesome. You get it. You get the misery I'm going through here. So that guy rocks. He's the best Disney employee.
Okay.
That apology meant the world to me. I'm sorry, we don't have anything stronger. So that was good. Then all the princesses have to come around to your table. And,
who was Ellie's favorite princess?
I don't know. Probably Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty.
Who was Owen's favorite princess?
He was pretty ambivalent to all of them. He just kind of stood there and glared at them. And
who was your favorite princess?
Well, I have a story there I can't share.
Okay, continue. Let's go on and continue on.
Okay, so then it's, dinner's wind up. We got a couple more hours left because it's a late dinner. And so, what else? We do some more rides. And then Annie says, it's the end of the day. So it's like 8 o'clock at night now. We got to do Small World. No. no, we're not doing Small World. Yeah, we're doing Small World. Kids, do you want to do Small World?
No.
Yeah, we want to do Small World. So we get wind up going to Small World. Have you ever been? You know what Small World is like.
Well, I know the song.
It's a Small World.
Is it a boat ride?
It's a boat ride, and there's all these little puppet robot things.
Kind of creepy, right?
That, yeah, are singing this song.
From around the world.
Yeah, and so you're 5 minutes of this ultra-obnoxious song. If you've never been on it and you want to suffer, just go to YouTube and look up the Small World song. It is hell on earth. And I've been trying to put on a good face for the sake of the kids, but I just can't do it anymore.
So Small World is the breaking point.
And I'm like, I hate this ride. I hate this ride. I don't want to be here.
What were you actually saying out loud?
I hate this ride. I hate this ride. I don't want to be there. And Annie's like getting mad at me. She's like, you stop talking bad about Small World. I said, I'm not going to stop talking bad about Small World. This is the worst ride in the world. This is terrible. This is pure torture. You know, and so then we're going along and there's like the emergency exit door. I'm like, I want to get out there. I want to get out there. You know, and so she's getting mad at me.
Now what's Owen and Ellie doing while you're doing that?
They think it's funny. So they're funny.
So were you trying to entertain them a little bit?
No. Okay. I'm just trying to get through it.
Okay.
So, yeah, we had our last good fight of the day there over Small World.
Oh, no.
And so then it's time for the mini detector to come into play, because I told her at the end of the day I'm going to use my mini detector. Okay, so they're going to go up to the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse, the last thing we're going to do that day. And I'm going to go use my mini detector to track down where Baby Minnie is, which is, of course, at the store. So I go to the store. And at first, like, I'm terrified because I can't find Baby Minnie anywhere.
No.
Can't find her. Finally find it. Okay. Now, the thing you have to understand about the Baby Minnie doll is that it comes with a blanket that's, like, stapled or something to the back of Baby Minnie. It's not a staple, but, you know, it's connected to Baby Minnie. Ellie had removed the blanket because she didn't want Baby Minnie to have it. So I get up there to pay for Baby Minnie.
Uh-huh.
And I say to the guy, do you have scissors? We got to cut the blanket off so she knows it's the same one. Explaining to him that, you know, I'm telling my daughter she lost her Baby Minnie. I got to convince her this is the same one. So we got to cut the blanket off. So thankfully he had scissors and was able to cut the blanket off for me.
Okay.
We get back and I say, look, my Baby Minnie detector worked. I found her. Here you go. Totally buys it. I win.
Nice.
Dad of the year. We go home.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
And then it was time to go home. 9.5 hours at Disney World. I was hating every single second of it. The next day, if this was the breaking point, the next day is the turning point.
Oh, good.
Where Annie, not where things get better,
oh,
but where Annie finally realizes that when it comes to Disney World, maybe it's best not to oppose Ben, because as we all know, Ben is right.
Ben is right.
I am right.
Yeah, so right. The next day was so bad that Annie was actually on board.
You're just going to have to wait and see. But there is the turning point.
I can't wait for next week.
You are right.
All of you who have disagreed with me, get in line, because it's apology time.
Wow.
So that's Disney World, day 3. 2 more to go.
Wow.
Next up, the adventure in Animal Kingdom and other horror stories.
Well, if you'd like to email us, where can they do that, Ben?
Ben@thescifichristian.com, feedback@thescifichristian.com, Matt@thescifichristian.com.
You can also call us at
612-4121-SFC.
Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians. Signing off.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to The Sci-Fi Christian. You can find us at thescifichristian.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is
Facebook.com/TheSciFiChristian.
You could also follow us on Twitter,
The Sci-Fi Christian.
And you can also call us at
612-4121-SFC.
Feel free to always email us any of your feedback at our email address, which is
feedback@thescifichristian.com.
And Ben, is there any other way that they can get in touch with us?
Nope.
There is one more thing they could do that would be helpful. Send us some money. That's right.
Yeah,
we'll take some donations.
Exactly. We are not in good financial condition.
Play that clip.
Where is it?
I don't know.
I can't find it.
You know what else you could do? You could also... you could leave us a nice rating on iTunes.
iTunes.
Yeah, you know, if you want to leave us a 5-star rating and a little comment, that really helps people know where we are.
Or even other podcasts.
Know that
sites.
We exist.
Yeah.
You can always comment right on our website. But yeah, definitely go leave us an iTunes rating. We never asked for that. That'd be cool. So
we've asked for it, I think, once or twice.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I said give us a 5-star, but I'm fine with whatever you feel.
4-star?
Whatever you feel is an honest.
Well, I think, how about, like, sometimes the car dealerships or whatnot will say, like, if you like it, tell them. If you don't, tell us.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, leave us a comment. We'll get the word out about the Sci-Fi Christian.
Man, where is that clip?
Yeah.
I can't find it.
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, will you just keep talking? Keep the promo going.
Well, I think another way you could get a hold of us is by just calling Ben at home. Hold on. I have my phone here.
Here's his
home number.
Hey, God.
I don't want you listeners to think we're in good financial condition. We still need those donations.
Yeah. We're going broke.
So help us out here as we head into the new year.
You just got to click the donate button on the website, guys.
Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians.
Yeah.
Signing off.
Yeah, goodbye.